Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
I've been through this, other people haven't. So for them, having this freedom taken away, there's so much stress, but my advice is always, this will end. This will end, and it will be amazing.
Well, we've all been pushed around.
Hello, and welcome to It's Complicated, the podcast to help you untangle your relationship with your phone.
Left our hearts in the lost and found.
I'm Tanya Gooden, and each week I'll be talking to my guests about how they manage the relationship with the tiny tyrant in their pocket. We'll be talking about how our phone habits affect our work, our lives, and our loves, and about what our relationship with our phone might just tell us about our relationship with ourselves. If you want help and you want hope, you've come to the right place. This is It's Complicated.
When I was planning the guests for this third season of It's Complicated, obviously I didn't know we were about to be hit by a global pandemic. I didn't know we were all going to be in lockdown from the beginning of March. So I wasn't really thinking about a guest that might be relevant to that situation. But actually, when I was chatting to this week's guest, I realised that she is the perfect person to be talking to us right now. I'm talking to Lauren Mahn, who is co-host of You, Me and the Big C, the hugely popular cancer podcast. She's also the founder of the Girl Versus Cancer blog, and she is a breast cancer survivor. She's also one of the most positive and uplifting and life-affirming people I think I've ever spoken to. And we had such a great chat about what her experiences of suddenly finding herself in a situation where her world has been turned completely upside down and nothing that she thought might happen in the future was certain anymore, how that might be relevant to the situation that we are all now in. And she also had some really thoughtful words about how we can support people amongst us who might be suffering from cancer at the moment and having to deal with that and deal with the fact that they're in the middle of this pandemic. It was a really fun chat, and I hope you enjoy it as much as I did.
So, Lauren, hi. Welcome to
Hello,
It's Complicated. I was just thinking that obviously we haven't met before and I didn't know you. And then I realised I saw you on First Dates Hotel.
That was me getting pied on national television.
And I remember it so vividly as well. And I remember really having a lump in my throat when I watched it. I thought it was, yeah, it was. What happened in the end? I know you didn't end up seeing the guy that you dated.
No.
But you knew him anyway, didn't you?
I knew him anyway. So they set me up with a friend. This was literally the summer after I came out of chemo. So it would have been like about 2017 that it was actually recorded. And then it went out in 2018.
Yeah, I remember.
And yeah, but I mean, we're still mates. He lives abroad now, but he's someone that we stayed in contact and I will never not be his mate. It was just a really funny time in my life, to be honest. I just come out of all this cancer treatment and really felt like my life was on the up and this is it. I'm finding love. And oh my God, they've matched me with someone who I've always kind of fancied. It's going to all happen. So when it didn't, it was such a knock, but I have to be honest, it was such a catalyst for all the amazing things that have happened since. Like, that was the thing that set wheels in motion. So I feel quite grateful for that experience, really.
Everything always leads somewhere, don't you think? I always think
Absolutely.
When anything happens at the time that you think, where is this going? You look back and think, that's why that was meant to happen. So when I was first getting into podcasts, listening to podcasts, everyone I spoke to when I said, which podcast should I listen to? They all said You, Me and the Big C. I mean, literally everybody. From, you know, that's friends so lovely, to my hairdresser to, you know, kind of millennials, Generation Z, so many people listening to it. So for people listening to this podcast that don't know about you and your story and your Girl Versus Cancer blog, can you just give us a bit of a kind of recap as to how you got here, how you set up the blog and then how you got into the podcast?
Absolutely. So those who don't know me, those who do know me will have heard me tell the story a million times. So you're gonna have to listen again. But I was diagnosed with breast cancer at the age of 31, and it really was about out of the blue for me. I don't really class my boobs as boobs. They're more of a goodwill gesture. And so for me, they really are. And I've never been a big fan of them. True story, actually. I was actually looking at maybe going for consultations for a breast enlargement before I got sick.
Before you got diagnosed, gosh.
Yeah, because I was like, I just don't feel feminine. But then actually, thank God I do have small boobs, because I found the lump pretty rapid. Mm. It was a really fast growing lump, and it kind of just appeared within the space of 2 months. And I was a bit lax at going to get it checked properly, because at 31, that was just not in my vocabulary, that word. It wasn't something that was in my world. It was older people that suffered with the disease.
Yeah.
So I never really worried about it. But it was cancer, and
And how long ago was this? How many years ago?
I was diagnosed in August 2016. So we're coming up for 4 years, which blows my little mind. Yeah, it's flown. But also really grateful that 4 years down the line I'm here, you know, because I know so many people that aren't. But I basically was diagnosed, found out pretty quickly that when I was started going through the motions of a cancer diagnosis, I had no idea. I had no idea about the ins and outs. I thought you got taken into a room and told you had cancer, then you went straight into treatment. There's so many more complexities to it. You know, there's further scans to check if it's spread. There's infertility tests. There's all this stuff that I had no idea about.
Yeah.
But also, I just found everything so clinical and cold. All the leaflets that were being handed to me were of women in a much more advanced life stage to me. And it just made me feel really lost and alone. Yeah. And I was desperately trying to find girls like me who wore bright coloured lipsticks, who liked to go out on the Prosecco of a weekend, who had done this and come out the other side. Because I think there's so much power in hope. Yeah. And if you can see someone has done it and you go, oh, I know someone else who's been through that, and look at them now. Okay, that will be me. And you can almost, you can't be what you can't see, can you?
Mm.
So I just started outreaching on Instagram, really, and trying to find girls like me. And I found a couple. And I decided, you know what? This perception of cancer, everyone thinks it is. It ain't what I thought it is. And I'm still me. I didn't want anyone to think, oh, Lauren's in cancer treatment or and like doom and gloom. It's like, no, I'm still doing this my way. I'm still me. So basically, I started talking about it under the hashtag Girl Versus Cancer. I don't know how that wasn't taken. It's ridiculous. And I started talking about my story and sharing my experience of the disease. And it turned out a lot of people needed it. And I formed a community kind of within my own Instagram account of other people going through similar things. And then it very quickly became bigger than I expected. And now it's its own website. I sell t-shirts for charities. I haven't added up. I think, I don't want to jinx it, but I think I might be over 100,000 now. But the last time I added it up, which was the summer, I was 61K. So I think I may
That's
have
how much you've
it,
raised.
I'm not sure. Yeah, for the charities. And then also just raising awareness about what cancer actually looks like, talking about it like it's EastEnders. And that's kind of how the podcast came about as well, because not only was I doing that, I found women like Rachel Bland and Deborah James, who are both talking about their cancers respectively in kind of similar ways. We're all very different women, but at the same time we had this common bond, and we were all just trying to break this taboo.
Yeah.
And it was actually Rachel, because she wrote a piece for my site. She's like, listen, I've got an idea. She's a Five Live broadcaster. She's like, I've got this idea, she said, this was her words, a podcast for cool Instagram girls with cancer. And I was like, oh, you think I'm cool? I thank Miss Bland. And she was an absolute babe. And I just went, yeah, that's definitely what we need. We need to have a conversation, not these clinical cold leaflets we see. And that's how it began. And, you know, it really, I'm so proud of it, because
it's
has
so
really
huge
helped.
Now, isn't it? It's really huge.
It's massive. And I'm like, it's a podcast about cancer. I don't think anyone would want to listen to that. But I think it's because it's so relatable you know, one or two of us will get it. And if you haven't got it, someone else will. And I think some people just want to listen in and learn, which is a really lovely thing. So yeah, that's where we're at now. It's been, we've won 5 or 6 awards now. We've been going for 2 years and we're all really proud, really, really proud. And for people who don't know, the lovely Rachel sadly died from her disease in 2018, but her instruction was to carry on the podcast. So we did as we were told. And we now have her lovely widow, Steve, on there with us, widower even. And yeah, he's amazing.
Yeah, I've listened to some episodes with him and it's lovely, actually, the dynamic between the three of you now with him there.
He's just the best. And it just really helps to keep Rachel feeling like she's close, you know?
Yeah. And he said it's helped him, didn't he? He said being involved in the podcast.
Yeah, because I think from the outside, for people, it must be so hard because you're going through it as well, you know, just in a kind of different way. Cancer just doesn't happen to the person. It happens to the ripple effect. It's everyone around them. It's the other one in two. So it's been really nice to be able to be a support for him as well. And I know that would make Rachel happy. So. Yeah. We're really proud. Yeah.
So my podcast, It's Complicated, is about our complicated relationship with tech. Mm. And one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you is because I've been looking for positive uses of technology. I'm on season 3 now. And I thought, actually, I spent a lot of time in the first 2 seasons thinking about kind of some of the negatives. But actually, I really wanted to highlight some of the really huge things social media in particular can do, and your community I think is one of those, because how would you have connected before if you'd had cancer before social media? How would you have found people like you?
Well, the thing is, this is the thing, like there was outlets, you know, there were forums, like online traditional forums, there would be, you'd find through your like clinical nurse specialists and stuff about support groups that you could physically go to.
Yeah.
But there's something really powerful in laying there and being that raw and vulnerable in those moments where you're laying in bed at night at 3 a.m., terrified of this thing that's in your body, not sure how your body is reacting to the treatment you're on that is ravaging you, just being really scared and just being able to go, I'm feeling like this, and put a post out there or a story and getting all of these people come back and go, mate, me too.
Me too, or, yeah.
And like even silly things that people don't know, like I didn't know. So one of my friends, Alice May Perkis, she was one of the first people, I think she was the first person other than another friend of mine who had bowel cancer and had survived it. So I spoke with her quite a lot. But my friend Alice had breast cancer and she was the first friend I made on Instagram because I put a post out and she messaged me right away and went, it's really brave that you've been so open. I did the same if you ever want to talk. And she became a rock to me. But she said to me, I'll never forget it, she went, mate, there's smooth and then there's chemo smooth. And I was like,
what's that?
She was like, you're about to become a dolphin. I was like, what? And then it was only when I started to shed hair after the first chemo that I realized, oh, like literally every bit
that's
of hair on your body.
Yeah.
Yeah, like all your arm hairs, all of your leg hairs, your pubes are gone for 6 months.
You
no
said
waxing,
nose
no
hair in one of your blogs, I think. You said someone had said to you, has your nose hair started falling out yet? And I thought, oh my God, does that fall out too? I hadn't even thought
yes.
of that.
Yes. No one told you that. So being able to go onto social media and go, guys, I've just turned my head and flung snot on the guy next to me. It's so embarrassing. And you'll get all these people being like, oh my God, make sure you've always got a hanky on you. Because you don't realise how much you need nose hair until you don't have nose hair.
Yeah.
So there, it's really powerful.
But have there been any negatives at all from having this platform? Have you had any issues with people kind of, you know, we all suffer, don't we? If we're women online, we all suffer from trolling and some of the, you know, bad side. Have you managed to escape that or have you had some?
No, of course I have. I think the thing is, the problem that I have is I'm quite an outspoken person and not in a horrible, like, Katie Hopkins mean way, in like a, I say what comes from my heart kind of way. So what I put out into the world actually is quite a vulnerable thing because I'm very much an open book. Mm. So what I do struggle with is I do everything that I do with the best intention. And there has been cases where I've written things on my Instagram, for example, like saying, when I did a photo shoot saying, oh, I got some of the cancer community's cool kids involved. And I didn't mean it as a, everyone else isn't cool. I just meant it as a nice thing for the guys who were involved.
Yeah.
And then I did get a message from someone who was like, I don't feel cool. I feel really isolated. I feel like I put on weight. I feel horrible. Da, da, da. Seeing that has really made me. And I'm like, oh my God. And it's horrible because you do feel a responsibility. I feel a responsibility to everyone because I just want to help, but I've also had to come to terms with the fact that, and I'm very open about the fact that I'm not a role model for this. I am someone who's had it, and I am being very open about my experience and be with and beyond the disease. I try and be as responsible where I can, but this is all just my point of view and my experience. So it's hard because you don't want to censor yourself too much that you're not authentic. But at the same time, it's being okay saying to yourself, my mum always says to me, you can't be everyone's cup of tea or you'll be a mug. And that is what I have to keep saying to myself, because, you know, my experience of cancer may be very different from someone else's. So it's okay. And actually, it's really healthy to have that kind of feedback, because it does make me more mindful, and I try and think things in a more rounded way whenever I put anything out into the world on those channels.
So has there ever been a moment where you've just thought, actually, no, this is too much for me. I'm juggling all the other stuff to do with, you know, my health and my treatment, and actually this is too much I've taken on?
Yeah, all the time. All the time. Even now, before coming on here talking to you, I just said to you, I've just done an Instagram Live and I've got enough work to do. I don't know why I'm adding this extra project in, but I'm just one of those people that I have an idea and I have to action it now. Cancer's kind of made that happen. Like, I don't just sit on things now. I'm like, okay, I need to actually do it, otherwise it won't happen. So there's this little sense of urgency that hasn't quit since I've been in recovery. But I do overwhelm myself a lot of the time. But actually, because it's so important to me what I do, it's not something that I'm willing to stop. But I do have a lot. I think it's more for me, it's resource. So it's getting a team and getting that funding at the minute. So I've just changed the structure of Girl vs Cancer in the past couple of weeks while we've been locked down, using this time to get all the admin-y stuff out of the way so that I can actually start going for funding to get me a team. Because I think if I've done this on my own, imagine what I could do for people.
Definitely.
Yeah. So yeah, there are a lot of times. And then also there's the whole new kind of challenge of, you know, I spent so long being this woman who had cancer, but also I'm Loza and I'm me, and having to come back to who I am, because there's so many parts of me that are still me, but there's a lot of me that's changed too, and figuring out what I want for myself and what works for me now, and new, like, all of a sudden from the podcast and through First Dates, I'm in the public eye now. There's a lot of opportunity coming to me that are really exciting. I never thought I would, like, potentially present on radio. I never thought that I would, like, maybe write a book. And there's all these things that are happening. So I have to give myself space for that too. So that's been a big challenge, to be honest, is taking too much on either side and finding balance there.
So one of the reasons you're so skilled at all the stuff you did in terms of promoting it, I mean, it was your job before. You worked in social media marketing, didn't you? So I'm really interested to know about how your relationship with technology and social media has changed over the course of, you know, kind of before cancer, during cancer, now. You know, what is your relationship with tech like? What's your relationship with your phone like?
I probably feel like most of the population, I don't like how much I'm on it. But I have found that I'm less of a scroller and I'm more of a worker on my phone. Like, my phone is my connection to my family and friends. My phone is also, I have two Instagram accounts. One is my personal brand. The other is the Girl vs Cancer brand. It says work to be done there. It's got emails on it. It's got banking on it. You know, everything's on our phones. And I think rather than beating myself up, it's accepting the fact that I'm going to be using my phone a lot, but it's having boundaries in place and noticing little red flags. Like, if I'm really got stuff to do, but I find myself procrastinating by going on TikTok, get off your phone. Yeah. My lovely friend Dominique, who is an illustrator, he is fantastic at putting his phone on airplane mode. So there'll be some times where I can't get hold of him for most of the day. And he's like, oh, I had a big project, so I just airplane moded my phone. And he puts on music loud and just gets on with his work. Yeah. So I've tried that. But I think having worked the brand side for social media, I love the creative aspect of it. I love creating imagery. I love making a narrative. I like thinking about different ways of expressing or sharing different stories or telling, you know, advertising product or anything. I like that. That is what I love. And then I love being able to communicate with people. What I really hated working brand side is it's money. Yeah. So no matter what, as soon as it starts becoming about stats and figures and stuff like that, which has been my job for most of my adult life, I realize now that doesn't spark joy for me. And actually, it's actually about creation, sharing like what we've created and interacting with one another and building those relationships online, that's what gets me hard. It's not the how many followers have I got. Do you know what I mean? I don't like all
that. Are you not in danger of having to get into that whole territory though when you're looking for funding, when you're looking for support? Is that an area that could start to be a bit tricky then? I mean, yeah, I realise it's not the same as getting, you know, advertising, but...
Yeah, no, 100%. And I do have to think about all those things. And actually, because of my background, it really frustrates me that I can't be all over it like I want to be. So when I do hire staff, there will be someone managing social media and it will be their job to report back. But the main thing will be planning out the content, making sure it's been received well by the community who needs it and that we're actually serving in the right way. So by doing that, naturally, you're going to have the growth. But I'm not going to put targets on that growth. Yeah. I'm going to let it happen because that needs to not be the focus. So my staff won't be judged on that. It will be judged on the execution, the interactions we're getting, what went well, what can we learn. I think that's kind of the take I want on it. So I can feel, the thing is, mate, it's grown organically as it is. With a team, it's going to organically grow again. So I try not to let that be the stress.
And the content is really beautiful. I mean, I think your feed is visually really beautiful and striking. And inspiring to look at.
Thank you. I just wanted to switch up what people thought cancer looks like.
Yeah, it totally changed my view. I mean, I think the podcast did that and then your blog, because when somebody said to me, listen to the podcast, I thought, oh, I don't want to listen to a podcast about cancer. That sounds really depressing. And of course, anyone who's listened to your podcast knows it's the opposite. It's the complete opposite of depressing. And I feel like that about your Instagram feed as well. It looks beautiful. It looks like a magazine when you look at it.
Well, this is the thing. I like always joke about, I go, it's cancer, hun, but make it editorial. That's always my banter, because it's showing cancer in a different light. It's making it a bit less scary, making it more palatable, and actually showing it from a different point of view. And actually, the last campaign we did, the Be More Jack campaign, which I'm so proud of, because I always try and make sure the community is front and center, but sometimes when you need to get the reach out there and you have to get like influencers, celebrities involved just to make sure the amplification happens, I worry that it gets lost. And for the first time, I was like, I'm not doing that. I'm literally just going to hone in on this tiny portion of the community that was affected by my dear friend Jack's death and see what happens. And honestly, it's one of the most proudest things I've ever made with my community. And I think it just tells the narrative of what a cancer experience looks like for so many different people. So again, it's using the channels rather than, you know, no offense to my mates, because loads of them are influencers, but rather than watching someone get dressed on an Instagram story every day and you're looking what outfits they're going to choose, putting something out into the world that's like, this is how my experience of cancer is, so that anyone who might be in a similar position can relate and they won't feel as alone. So it's a nice way to use that platform for different things, I think.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
So we're both living in lockdown Britain at the moment.
Thanks
to the coronavirus. And I was thinking, it's really interesting because I'd made some notes about what I wanted to talk to you about. And then I went onto your Insta feed and you had said almost exactly what I was about to ask you, which is, given that we are now all experiencing, you know, life's turned upside down, we're living with this massive uncertainty, we're living with kind of loneliness, isolation, I thought actually you know what that feels like. You knew what that felt like before we all went through this. So I thought actually we can probably learn a lot from you. And then I noticed you posted that on your content and said to your community, actually there's stuff that we could be sharing. So what can we learn from you about how to cope with a situation like this?
I think the main thing is, love, do you know what? Like, what I do understand that isolation is really hard, and especially for people who are ill, people who are in abusive relationships, people who maybe don't have much money or time, or their kids are at home and they're having to homeschool. Like, there's so many nuances to this. I'm by no means saying this is easy, but in the grand scheme of things, we have to just stay home. We're not having to do open heart surgery. Well, most people, we're not having to do nasty things to anybody. We're having to just try and keep ourselves and others safe. So the issue we have is we live in a country where we've never really had our freedom taken from us. We're not in a dictatorship. We're not told what to do, what to think, how to behave. So this is a big shock to the system for everyone, I think. But because I've had to stay home for my own health before, it feels a bit samey. And what I keep trying to remind myself is there's ways that this is the same and there's ways that this is different. So I think by hopefully sharing this, it might help people. So in some respects, it's the same because I'm at home in the same four walls, not being able to go outside for fear of my health being in jeopardy. So it's the same. Yeah. But it's different in that none of my friends are outside living their lives. We're all doing the same stuff.
Yeah.
So that FOMO is really, that honestly, that was one of the hardest things in cancer treatment, seeing everyone else live their lives and yours is on pause.
Yeah.
We're all pausing.
We're all pausing together. Yeah.
Exactly. I think it's the same in that, you know, it can be quite confronting when you're left alone in your own bubble, when you haven't got all these distractions that you usually have with life, that it can be quite confronting and underlying things. But it's different in that, again, we're all doing it, but there's so, when you're in cancer treatment, you're so weak and there's only so much you can do. Whereas now it's like, okay, there's so much online, everything's gone online. So you can work out at home, you can learn how to cook, you can learn a new skill, you can listen in and learn more about your favorite people on Instagram or the TV. You can finally read a book, you can catch up on box sets. You know, I'm weirdly, because all I did in chemo was watch box sets, I've actually barely watched any. I've just been reading and like trying to be creative and stuff, because for me, the box set thing is harder to do because I've done it already.
Mm. Does it remind you too much of being, you know, when you were going through treatment then?
Yeah. And also it just gives me ants in my pants. Like, I try not to do it every day. Like, I'll do it a couple of days. Like, I'll do it on a Sunday and making my weekends count. Like, they're still weekends. So last Saturday, me and my flatmates got dolled up, got to the living room, streamed some live music and had a boozy brunch. And it was great. But also, I think, you know, it's the same in that there's health anxieties and there are real worries, but also it's different in that I am healthy and most people in the country will be healthy. Yeah. And so, yes, this is inconvenient. And that's what I always try and say to people is, this is more than anything really inconvenient. Yes, it's terrifying. Everyone's panicking. What are we going to do about jobs? What are we going to do about businesses folding? We need to not worry about that and deal with it as it happens, because the worry of what's to come is actually much more scary than what's happening.
Yeah.
And it's the same as in cancer treatment, babe. You just take it day by day, week by week. Do not think about, I've got so many people on Instagram going, what if it's 3 months? Some part of my brain just is not computing that. And it's going, I'm not thinking about that. I'm going to think about this week and the next week, because I've done this. And I know by doing that and overwhelming yourself, there's no good can come of it at all.
So is there a part of you that gets a bit frustrated thinking, come on, you know, this is nothing like you going through cancer. This is, you know, it's a kind of, as you say, it's a problem of us all just not liking the fact that we can't go out. So are you finding yourself getting a bit annoyed by it at all or not?
I wouldn't say annoyed. Sometimes I just want to be like, come on, babe, let's have a bit of perspective. Let's have a chat and try and be positive, because I feel like if you get into that black hole and that swirling black hole, it takes a lot more energy to get back out of it. Whereas if you kind of skim the top of it and bring yourself back out, it's a lot easier to do. But everything is relative. I've been through this. Other people haven't. So for them, having this freedom taken away, this health anxiety, this uncertainty around finances, which is very similar when you go through cancer treatment and you can't work, it's a very scary time. There's so much stress. There is so much stress. But my advice is always, one, this will end. This will end and it will be amazing. I cannot even describe to you the elation and the gratitude and the appreciation you will have when you come out of your house and have freedom again.
Our like, first party.
Oh my God, babe. Like when I came out of cancer treatment and I started to feel well enough again and my immune system was on the mend and my white blood count went up, getting on the tube and traveling across London freely was the biggest boner I've ever had. I was like, I can move around my city. And it's those little things that we have taken for granted for so long that people get so bogged down in the nothingness, the comfortably numbness, the things that don't actually matter. And I think what this is going to do is give people perspective.
Yeah, it's a massive shake up, isn't it? Yeah.
And I'm glad, in some ways, I think maybe this is what was needed. We just all need to hunker down now and do our bit. So yeah, there's lots. I mean, everyone is entitled to be afraid and worried. I'm really overwhelmed by it some days. But just, I think what helps me to get through it is to take it day by day. Don't think about the end goal because we don't know when that is yet. So take it day by day and remember it will end and think how amazing it's going to be when we do. It'll all be worth it. All of it will be worth it.
So I'm really conscious that one of the, I think, positive things that's potentially going to come out of this is that we all connect a bit more with our local community and our neighbours. And that's already happening in my local area. And we're really aware that there are vulnerable people living in this area and there are people undergoing treatment for cancer. And I was wondering, you know, what's your advice about how do we support, how do we talk to friends and family that might be going through cancer treatment at the moment and having to deal with all of this? What's the best, you know, language we can use? How can we talk to them? How can we help them? How can we support them through this?
I think the main thing is listening, because there are going to be so many fears. I know for a lot of cancer patients that there's been treatments cancelled, operations pushed back, which are potentially life-threatening things to happen. So for them, it is this mass uncertainty. So I think, you know, this isn't to say anyone else can't feel anxious, but it might be careful what you're complaining to them about, because they'll probably be sitting there like, hey, buddy, I'm on a
problem. This is not a problem.
So I think it's been mindful of that. Moan to them about your boyfriend being an arsehole, but don't maybe moan to them that, oh my God, I'm putting on loads of weight being in lockdown.
I can't go to the hairdresser.
So that won't go down well. I think the other thing is the little things count so much in times like this. And if you can't physically be there to support them, it could be something small as sending them a pack of books off Amazon so they can read, sending them some bedding or some
That's
like
a
candles.
Good idea. Yeah.
Yeah, like, oh my God, bath oils are life when in cancer treatment, I found. They just really helped me to relax and ease the aches and pains in my body. Checking in and just going, and not checking in going, oh, how are you, babe? Being like, hello, love. How are you getting on?
Yeah.
Like just making sure you're okay. And offering things, you know, I know a lot of cancer hospitals or hospitals are doing like drive-through treatments where people are driving up to the hospital, getting their bloods done in the car park and then going on. And it might be that you might offer to drive someone somewhere.
Yeah.
It might be that, you know that they're really craving cookies at the minute and they can't get out. So send them a box of cookies. It's those little acts of kindness that will go a long way, but also been really understanding that this for them is a very different kettle of fish.
Yeah.
And there is no right or wrong way, but I think just being there.
Yeah. And not shying away from it. Yeah.
Yeah. And don't like, listen, the head tilt is out the window, no pity involved, but it's just genuine care for somebody. So it's not being afraid to ask the questions and it's not being afraid to hear the answers. And actually letting someone be scared, I think, is a really powerful thing. Because I know when I was having really scary times and I'd say, I'm terrified, I don't want to go back into treatment, what if this, what if that? When people would reassure me, I realised it was because they were making themselves feel better, because no one could tell you. So actually letting someone be scared and going, honestly, I don't know what you're going through. This is horrific. It's really shit. I'm so sorry. How do we help you get out of this funk? And that is the kind of stuff I think that really helps people through.
So I noticed that you're not producing the podcast at the moment.
Not at the moment, no.
Are you missing it? Is that part of what helps you, the kind of producing that?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm missing it and I miss them loads. We're kind of family, you know. We've been through something that's bonded us forever. And actually, you know, it gives me such a big sense of worth, like going off and doing those podcasts and trying to be able to support people in that way. I think the reason why we've had to stop, obviously, is because we can't be getting all together with self-isolation. Yeah. Deborah is in treatment, so we have to be really mindful. But also, it's really hard, you know. We are talking about maybe trying to do something remotely if we could figure out the tech, because there's a lot of us to be tuned into. But it's being very mindful because, you know, things are changing constantly with this. And what we don't want to do is say something and give advice that then changes
24 hours later. Yeah.
So, but maybe it's more of just a think piece and sharing our feelings about this and how we're getting on and sharing some things that might support people. So we're not saying we'd like to think we might be able to do something, but it probably won't happen overnight. It'll probably be a week or two off yet.
Yeah, but, it's a challenge for everyone at the moment, isn't it? There's a lot of remote podcast recording going on.
Yeah, well, this included, but it's what's been so lovely, though, is having people messaging us going, we really miss the pod.
Mm.
We're really missing hearing you guys. And that's been so lovely because it's like, oh, yeah, we can't wait to get back to it.
So I've got three questions that I always ask everyone on the podcast. The first question I'd like to ask you is, if you just had one message to give to everybody about their habits around technology, their phone, social media right now, what would you be saying to them?
I would say that have your boundaries. So, you know, if you're finding yourself just sitting there endlessly scrolling through your phone rather than talk to the person next to you, put your phone on airplane mode and put it in your drawer. I feel that there's nothing wrong with using your phone or using technology as long as it doesn't become a replacement for human contact.
Yeah.
Because I feel like, you know, connection is important, but by being more plugged in, we've become unplugged from everyone else. Mm. So, like, it's little things, you know, like when we can go for dinner again, I don't have my phone on the table, and if I do, it's face down because I'll only check it when my mate goes to the toilet or something. Do you know what I mean? It's those little things of being mindful that you're not missing out on relationships and connection because you're stuck to people's lives in a phone that is not your own.
And are you setting any different boundaries now with the whole kind of, you know, being at home? Is there anything? I mean, one of the things I'm doing is I'm not checking news as much as 100%. I was, because I think that's just making me anxious, seeing the endless
stories. I think
you're
all really guilty of that, though, mate. At the beginning, I was. Like, now we know we're in lockdown and we're here, I just watch the 5 o'clock news.
Yeah, me too. The press report, yeah. Mm.
And I think that's what everyone's doing. And I try not to read any articles unless it's from the BBC, but I genuinely don't go looking for them now. I don't need to know. I don't want to know how many deaths there have been because it's not going to change anything. So,
and we can't do anything about it. Yeah.
You can't do anything about it. So be mindful of your intake, 100%. And also, you know, especially Instagram could be like this. Even in times like this, the pressure to be active and to learn a language or, you know, get up, get showered. If you have a day where you genuinely can't get out of bed, stay in bed, eat chocolate.
Yeah,
tomorrow's a new day.
Yeah.
Don't feel bad about that. Everyone's dealing with this in their own ways. Like, tomorrow I've already decided. I was up till 4 a.m. last night working on stuff. Got up this morning, did this live, done this podcast. I've got a full afternoon. Tomorrow I'm down in tools after lunch and I'm sitting on the sofa.
Yeah.
I don't care. I'm going to eat Jaffa cakes and read a book and no one's going to stop me. I'm not going to feel guilty for it. So I think this kind of culture that we're seeing now about having to achieve so much in this period, there's a lot to be said for reflection and rest, and it's just as important. So, you know, giving yourself the space to feel through whatever this is just as important. So don't, you know, just because you're seeing, it's that comparison and monster again. Because you're seeing other people do it.
It feels really competitive, doesn't it? People sharing everything they're doing at the moment in lockdown, and yeah, the danger is that we all feel really inadequate because we're not learning Arabic or or doing something really massively creative. So
yeah, yeah, exactly.
So have you got a tip that you haven't already shared about how you get a good balance? There's a couple of things you've mentioned. I was wondering if there's any other. What do you do about sleep? Do you have any rules about sleep?
Oh, I'm really bad at the minute. I am normally quite good, but this has kind of thrown me with the kind of change of scene and routine and stuff. But I have, on the weekend, not so much last night because I was up so late working, but I'm reading before bed now. So I actually have a Kindle. So I'm trying to read because I really struggle to read because I work for myself. I don't commute.
Yeah.
So normally I would read on a commute when I worked for other people. So I'm trying to read in bed before I go to sleep. And actually realizing it will get to a certain point in the night where I'm watching something on TV, I'm half on my phone, half on there, and I'm like, no, this is bedtime. You're not even interested in what you're watching. You're just scrolling. So I will take myself up to bed and actually have a good night's sleep. And actually, do you know what? My Instagram techers that I've been making have really been helping me in the mornings, because otherwise you wake up and you go straight into your emails. Like, my phone is my alarm.
Yeah, it is for most people. Yeah.
Yeah, so actually, rather than going straight in and reading everything and consuming, I like to put stuff out. So then day before, I always make a note of what I'm going to put on my isolation techers. So in the morning, then I'll put those posts out and then I'll put my phone down and I'll go to the loo and make some breakfast. And if it's one of the days where I fancy going out for a run, I'll do that. And then I'll come back and work. And it's actually that way around more than bedtime. That's helping me a lot.
Yeah.
Monitoring what I'm putting in first thing rather than, you know,
just
like how I'm starting my day.
Scrolling. Yeah.
Yeah.
And what have you learned about yourself from your tech habits over the years? What would people say? What would friends and family say about your tech habits? Do they comment on the way
I think my mum hates it when I put her on my Instagram. She's always like, stop it. She's like, I forget people aren't as open as me. And actually, then they're like, yeah. Oh, no. I think they would probably, I don't know if they think, to be fair, I think most of us who are online are guilty of this. I am who I am, but I'm on when I'm on Instagram and stuff. You know, you switch it on a lot of the time. So I think for them, it might be more, you know, when they see just me being me and like my downtimes and stuff, they appreciate that. But in honesty, when I'm with my friends and family, I try not to be on my phone.
So you're not one of those people that people would say, we can't get her attention. She's always on it. She's always posting an Insta story or she's always doing something.
We're all guilty of being that person sometimes. I know there's been times where I've been at my mum's and she'd be talking to me and it's gone right over my head because I've not been paying attention. I've been on my phone.
Mm.
And then I get annoyed at myself and put my phone down. But it's little things like I'll take pictures for Instagram stories, but then I'll put my phone down and I'll upload them later. It's all those little changes that I've made to my life to make sure I'm present when I'm there. But yeah, I think what I've learned most about myself is I am addicted to technology. I do rely on it for a lot. Even the other day, I was like, how did I go anywhere without City Mapper?
I love City Mapper. I think that's live without, actually, living
in London.
What do
we do without it? Yeah. Mad. And it's those kind of little things that I've learned about myself. But also, do you know what? I'd be a liar if I said, you know, social media does offer up a certain level of validation. And if you are having a bit of a poo day and you put makeup on and put a picture up and someone goes, oh my God, you look beautiful. Yeah. It does raise your mood.
It makes you feel good. Yeah.
So, yeah. So I do. Yeah, definitely. Like I do use it as it has got a little bit of attachment to self-worth and stuff because it's my job. Mm. So like if I put something out and it isn't well received or no one really engages, I'm like, oh, but I'm aware of it. So I think that's a good thing.
And you are, you know, you say you're addicted, but you are doing something so positive with your platforms. And there are a lot of people who really aren't doing, yeah. You know, I'm thinking of the Detox Tea Brigade.
Oh, my God.
But, you know, so that must make you feel good when you see the difference you're making, actually.
Yeah, it does. It also comes with a lot of pressure as well. I think that pressure of not doing enough ever, because you're always seeing other people doing loads more. But just knowing that what you're doing is enough is something I've had to learn. But that's why I try not to be on as technology as much and consume what's going on, because by consuming it, you think you need to be doing more and putting more out.
So that's why you post and create before you consume.
Exactly. And I just try and do that rather than scrolling feeds. I just will post and then go off and do stuff. And then later on, when I've got a minute, when I'm eating food or whatever, I'll just go through and like interact with my community. But other than that, I try not to just constantly consume. It's really hard because it's that double-barreled thing, isn't it? It's like you want to be relevant and you want to know what's going on in the world and you want to get inspired by things. But then also you get sucked into this rabbit hole. They're very clever, these apps. They know what they're doing.
Yeah, it's all deliberate. Yes. Yeah. I could talk to you all day, but you've been up since 4 o'clock. Or you're up last night since 4 o'clock. So I want to say to everyone listening to this to definitely go to your Girl vs. Cancer feed and blog. I particularly love your strapline for badass humans making cancer their bitch. Made me laugh out loud when I saw that.
That's what we're doing. That's what we're doing.
And I really hope that you do find a way of getting the podcast together in some form over the next couple of weeks, because I think, I mean, your listeners, I'm sure, would love that. And it's brilliant. It's really uplifting and joyful. It's a joy to listen to. And we all need a bit of that at the moment, don't we?
Yeah, we definitely do. And I think something as well, just to remember, it's not doom and gloom at all, but it would be off brand for me not to say this, but just because the world has stopped, cancer hasn't.
Yeah.
So please, if there's anything that you're worried about or you've noticed persistently because you've actually got the time to stop, if there is anything you're worried about, please do contact your GP, whether it be a lump in your breast, whether you're bleeding abnormally, abnormal bowel movements, persistent pains, you know, anything that's a bit worrying, please just get it checked out, because we're in a point at the moment where diagnosis is still need to happen.
Yeah.
So
GPs are still working. They're still working. They're doing phone consultations and video consultations. So
exactly. Yeah. So we just need to make sure if you're listening and there's a niggle, speak to your GP. They're still there. Yeah, please do that.
Oh, well, thanks so much, Lauren, for talking to me. It's been absolutely brilliant.
Thank you, darling. It's been such a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to this episode of It's Complicated. If you haven't already, please do subscribe, rate and review the podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts from. It helps other people find us and it means you get a helpful little notification when a new episode becomes available. For more about getting a healthy balance with tech, you can follow me, Tanya Goodin, or Time to Log Off on Instagram and Twitter. And both my books, Off and Stop Staring at Screens, are available on Amazon and at all good bookshops. Finally, for more information about this and other episodes in the podcast series, visit itstimetologoff.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.